Welcome back to the Leaders Lab podcast. I'm your host, Ken Eslick, and today on the show, we have Danielle Kobo. She is a former Fortune 500 senior sales manager who propelled her team to number one in the nation during corporate upheavals, all while her spouse was being deployed in Iraq and she was at home raising high-energy twin boys. She then left corporate and launched a successful speaking and consulting business. Danielle is also author of the book Unstoppable Grit: Break Through the Seven Roadblocks Standing Between You and Achieving Your Goals. She also hosts the globally top-rated podcast Unstoppable Grit with Danielle Kobo. Through Danielle's captivating storytelling, content-rich and motivational style, she empowers listeners to cultivate resilience and grit to thrive in today's demanding work environment. Join me in my conversation with Danielle Kobo. Welcome to the Leaders Lab, Danielle.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on the Leaders Lab podcast.
Yeah, you've had such a unique background and I'd love to hear more about it. I got to get caught up a little bit through your podcast and your website, but you know, can you talk us through? I know now you're an author, you're a coach, you do all these things, but I know life started with you from a professional standpoint in more of a corporate setting. Yeah.
Yes, my career started. So I started working full-time when I was 16, which I believe is part of my story because it did help me develop the work ethic that I currently have now. I worked two jobs all through college so that I can graduate college debt-free. And I started my first career. Well, I did copier sales when I was 23 years old. I did it for about 6 months. I always knew I wanted to go into medical sales, but I knew I needed to have some outside sales experience. I hated it. Yeah. It was definitely a lot of door-to-door cold calling, which I've done throughout my career, but I just didn't have the passion for selling copiers.
Sure.
With that said, it did open the doors for me to get into medical sales. So I spent 5.5 years in dental sales, and then I moved into the medical aesthetic industry, and in total spent about 15 years in corporate.
And so I noticed in looking at your timeline, you were moving up quick. You were doing all the stuff that great sales reps do, you know, making quota, president's club, things like that. That led to kind of an early promotion for you. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was actually working for a medical. I have never been in a position where I was looking for a job. I was working for dental sales for 5.5 years. And in the 5.5 years that I was there, I had earned 4 consecutive president's clubs. And I'm very grateful because I always maintained my LinkedIn profile, which I think has been very helpful in opening up the doors to new possibilities for me and my career. And I had a recruiter reach out to me and she said, you know, have you ever thought about medical aesthetics? And I had no idea what the industry was.
Right.
But I ended up going on an interview because I believe in being open to what's out there. You always have the position to say yes or no. I ended up going on the interview, took the position, and it ended up being a great door to open because I thoroughly enjoyed the medical aesthetic industry. I worked selling capital equipment for medical aesthetics. However, the company that I had been working for, I worked there for about a year, and I could see the writing on the wall that they were going to be going through an acquisition. So they were stripping back all of their expenses so that they had higher profit, so that they seem more profitable for a prospect company to purchase them. So while this was happening, I ended up going on an interview for a sales rep position for Allergan, which is the makers of Botox.
Sure.
While I was going for the interview and I'm explaining to her my background, what's interesting is I had shown her a business proposal that I had created while I was in dental sales. I was 25 at the time. I had created this business proposal where I wanted to create a position within the organization of the national director of sales training because we really didn't have a sales training department. And I remember my first taste of sales training and how it shifted my perspective. And I saw my sales started to skyrocket after that training. And I said, wow, I see the benefits of this. I really believe that we should have sales training in the organization. So I created this business proposal when I was in dental sales. It included everything from market research for the growing salary, how the commission structure was going to be structured, all the roles and the responsibilities, all tied back to how quickly and could I get some of these new hires onboarded, as well as the continuous development of the team across the nation.
You're giving that to the interviewer in a sales rep interview, right?
Yeah.
So an individual contributor role?
Yeah. So I created this business proposal when I was in dental sales when I was 25. When I was interviewing, I was 30 years old when I was interviewing for this individual contributor role. And I'm showing her this business proposal.
Right.
And I'm just kind of explaining like what I had created. And she looked at me and she says, okay, I have a question for you. She says, there is a management position open. Would you consider applying for it? And I'm thinking in my head, I cannot believe that she is asking me this question. I was 30 years old. I had no direct management experience. I am an outsider from another company. I'm not being promoted within the organization. So I was really surprised that that was the question that was being asked. And of course, I said yes, because I knew that that was a trajectory that I wanted to go within my career. And I ended up having a 4-hour interview in front of 6 of the executive leadership team. And I had a broken down analysis that was provided to me. So it was an overview of the team. What were their strengths, their weaknesses, their opportunities? And I had to prepare a game plan of how I was going to lead one of the poorest performing teams in the nation.
Right.
And I was 30. I did get the job. So I was very excited, but I was 30 years old, no direct management experience. And I was the youngest manager in the whole company. So I really had the odds stacked against me, but I ended up serving in that role for 7 years and had a lot of success in that role.
I mean, it shows the power of, I mean, I was mentioning to you pre-show that like that's what we do is talent acquisition. So we're always coaching people on interviews and how to show up. And I mean, talk about the power of like a good brag book. You know, sales reps always have a brag book, right? Like your roles, but this is like one level beyond that. It's not just a brag book. It's like, here's a potential solution to a problem you may or may not even know that you have, but what it shows is your level of, I think, critical thinking. And that's probably why they moved you into that role. Now, what happened initially? So you go from no direct reports, no real, at least official leadership experience, you know, outside of personal life. What's that like jumping into this new team, which sounds like, I mean, you said it was a poor performing team too. So it's not just like you're jumping in and maintaining the ship. You've got some work to do from day one, it sounds like.
I had a lot to do from day one. So we were a division that had recently been acquired by the pharmaceutical company. And in that acquisition, there was a lot of challenges and collaboration. In order to be successful in the role, it really meant that you needed to collaborate with all the different divisions within the medical aesthetic umbrella of the company. And there were, you know, one division was used to doing it one way, another division was used to doing it another way. So there was a lot of conflict going on. And then just a year into working for the organization, we were experiencing a hostile takeover from a competitor. So a competitor was secretly buying stocks and trying to get majority shares so that they could purchase the organization. And it became global news because it would have created a monopoly within the industry. And it was a challenging time where a lot of my team was wondering, are we going to be purchased by this company? Are we going to still have a job? There was a lot of, if we were purchased by the organization, we wouldn't need as many sales reps because there was duplicating products.
Sure.
And it was a lot of uncertainty. It was scary. And what ended up happening while we were going through this attempted, because they ended up not purchasing us, we ended up winning it in court, is we went through restructuring, we went through downsizing. So one day while I'm in a meeting with one of my sales reps, we're meeting with a customer, I get a text message from my boss and it says, hey, can you please answer the phone right now? And I responded back, I was like, yes, I'm in a meeting with a customer. Can I call you as soon as I'm done? And he goes, nope, step outside right now. I'm like, oh, what's going on here? Yeah. Wow. Okay. You know, what's the emergency that I need to step outside? You know, my immediate thought is like, is everybody okay?
Sure.
And I call him and the only thing he says is, you have a job, but don't answer your phone today.
Wow.
That's it.
That's pretty cryptic.
Yeah. There's a lot to interpret in that, yeah, in that short conversation. So I go back into the meeting with the customer and I step outside. My phone is buzzing nonstop while I'm in the meeting. the rep and I step outside, we get into our car. And every time that I'm done with a co-travel and we're meeting with a customer, the rep and I will kind of recap the conversation in the meeting. What went well? What did not go well? What will we do differently so that we're constantly improving and ensuring that we're delivering exceptional customer service and that we're moving the needle in the business in a positive direction? And I remember her phone kept on ringing and she's like, can I answer this? And I was like, yeah, answer it. It was one of the girls from our team. And I hear on the other line, I just got let go.
And that's your direct report.
It was my direct report. I ended up losing 4 out of the 8 people on my team in one day. I had no idea what was happening. That was the only thing I knew was you have a job, don't answer the phone.
Right.
Gratefully, the person that I was with was not let go. Could you imagine how awkward that would have been?
Yeah, fun ride back to the office.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. And we had an hour drive together. So, and it was really difficult too, because I was told not to answer the phone, but I couldn't disclose that to my rep at the time. So here my rep is thinking, well, why aren't you answering the phone? And then they're all calling her. My team's getting frustrated because I'm not answering the phone. They're all getting laid off. They don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on. It was a mess.
Wow. And so what did you, I mean, I'm curious a couple of things, first of all. So it sounds like in the year or so that you had in that role prior, that it did gel pretty well, it sounds like. I mean, just from the way things that you're telling me about your leadership, did the team take to you pretty well? Did you build a pretty good foundation up until this point where the wrecking ball came through?
I believe that the team that I had taken over was a team that was kind of working independently of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big component that when we support each other and we're all supporting each other, the whole ship rises. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I found when in the first year that we started to really gel as a team. I did a lot of team building, did a lot of understanding their personality, their core values, getting to know the person as an individual beyond just what were their career goals. And mm-hmm. so I believe that that was beneficial, because when the time came where a lot of the team was displaced, or you know, there's still the survivors that remained and their uncertainty of like, are we going to go through another round of layoffs? I had established a pretty good rapport and trust with my team where they felt comfortable and confident to be candid with me about what their thoughts were. And that was very helpful during that time.
Yeah. It's just too bad that, and I get sometimes there's corporate reasons or whatever, but it's too bad that there was such a lack of transparency, because that message certainly would have been delivered better by someone they trust like yourself than someone at corporate. And I think that oftentimes companies, I just saw, I don't know if you saw this, but some girl got fired on Zoom, and it happens in today's day and age, but this is a tech worker that got fired via Zoom by two people she's never met before in her life. And she decided, it was a similar situation to yours where like the rumor mill, not just rumor mill, but phone calls had already started happening. Her peers were being let go. And they said they were all getting these impromptu last minute, 15 minute meetings where they were getting sacked. Right. And so she's like, boom, 15 minute meeting appeared on her calendar and she decided to record it. And she had some like very legitimate questions of these people who couldn't explain anything to her. I mean, what they were doing was talking about, it was your performance or it was this. And she's like, what are you talking about? Like she had her number, she had her. And it was a really bad mark, I think, on this company and the way that they do business and the way that they treated people. You know, when mm-hmm. I understand the need for corporations, I've worked in them and I've had to be one of those guys making those decisions at times. But there's this human element where it's like, it's not just 7 people off the org chart or 30 people off the org chart. It's someone's family, someone's income, someone's relationships, right, that you're impacting. And there's certainly a more humane way to do it. How did that sit with you afterwards? Were you with the company very long after that?
I was with the company for 6 years after that. So that was my first year within that role. You know, there is an aspect that I do respect the decision that was made.
Right.
One of them being the reason why the managers were not the ones making the call was, and this is something that my VP of sales says, is he says, if I'm the one that's responsible for making the decision on who is being laid off, then I should be the one responsible for making the call. And right. So my VP of sales is the one that actually individually with HR called every single person that was displaced that day. So I respect my VP for that decision. Yeah, I think that he made the right decision. Mm-hmm. Where I would have done things differently is to at least given the managers at least a 24 hours heads up, because that was really uncomfortable to be in the car. And it would have been maybe while the VP of sales was making those calls, the managers could have been in a training session on how to lead a team through change. That was my first time going through it. I didn't know what to say, what not to say. So I believe that anytime that an organization is going to go through change, it's really important that the organization provides the managers with the tools and the resources to navigate through those conversations. Whether they're part of the conversation of letting somebody go or not, they're still in the aftermath, and they still need to find a way to support those that have been laid off and support those that still remain.
Totally.
Because you've also got to find a way to take a team who's going through uncertainty and they're wondering if they're going to have a job and they've got remorse. They're in one way, they're grateful they have a job, but in another way, they have remorse because they feel bad that their coworkers were the ones that were laid off.
Sure.
And so, you know, how do you bring a team back together after that? That is a lot when I'm working with organizations. That's what I teach the managers how to do, because that was not taught to me.
Right.
I was very young, didn't have management experience. And there was decisions that I made that were good. And then there's decisions I look back and go, wow, if I know what I know now, I would have done things a lot differently.
I think that's where a lot of coaches come from, is like, I wish I would have had this advice, right? And is that what led you to eventually breaking out on your own? Were you like, hey, I think I've got some knowledge that I can share with people that are coming up through the ranks? I mean, was that idea kind of brewing with you for a while?
No. So I had no intention of starting a business.
Yeah.
When I ended up leaving, so when this company eventually got acquired by another organization, I mean, we had been acquired multiple times and we had acquired multiple companies in my 7 years that I was there. The most recent time that I got acquired, it became a very toxic work environment. So I ended up leaving the organization. And at that moment, I was like, wow, for the first time, I am looking for a job it's been 2 decades since I've looked for a job. I really should be focusing on what is my brand presence and how do I want to be showing up so that when recruiters are looking for top talent, that they're reaching out to me based off of what I am putting out there. And so I started to post on LinkedIn and I started to share insights on leadership. I started to share insights on leading teams through change, how to be successful in an interview. And this all was in 2020 when a lot of people were going through the Great Resignation or they were getting laid off. So I started to show up and post, and the feedback that I received was really what inspired me to start the business. There was a lot of people that would share and they'd send me messages saying, you know, your post really resonated with me. Thank you so much. I've been going through a difficult situation. Or, hey, do you do career coaching?
Right.
So what started with me looking for a job, developing my brand on LinkedIn, and just being consistent and showing up opened the doors to eventually me becoming a full-time speaker, a career consultant. I've now written a book. I now have a podcast, Unstoppable Grit podcast. So it's opened up all these doors just from showing up on LinkedIn and sharing some of my wisdom.
That's amazing. We're big on LinkedIn, obviously, being in the business that we're in, but I can't stress it enough for anybody looking for a job now. I would say, I'm making up a stat, but it's going to be close. I would say about 95% of the people that we place, we find on LinkedIn. It's very rare that we go to job boards anymore, maybe a little bit on Indeed here and there. And you know, I would say it's either Indeed or, I mean, I'm sorry, it's either LinkedIn or referrals from people, you know, that we've placed before. So I'm curious on the personal side, along this run of being a sales manager, everything, is that when you and your future husband met and when you started having kids, or like when, tell me about that.
Yeah. So my husband and I met, we had known each other for several years, but we got married right before I took that position as a manager. So we got married when I was 30 years old. And then a couple months after we got married is when I stepped into this position. But what was interesting was my husband initially, so he had just graduated from his MBA. He had launched a successful business, and right before we got married, he's like, you know, I've really been thinking about joining the military. And I was like, absolutely, I'll support you.
Yeah.
Not knowing what the life was going to be.
I literally thought when you said absolutely, I thought the next word was going to be not. Absolutely
yeah.
not. But
yeah.
no, absolutely. You were supporting.
Well, that's cool. Well, in the beginning it was. My husband has his father was an immigrant from Cuba and came over on the Peter Pan freedom flights and lived in an orphanage between 11 and 13 until his family was able to come over. He ended up becoming a very prominent, well-known general surgeon in the California area. So my husband had this desire to give back to the country that had opened up so many doors to his family. And I at first said, yes, absolutely, I'll support you. And then he put the ring on.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I was like, nope, I now have my dream job. I have just purchased my own house, which in California, to be owning your own house before the age of 30 was an accomplishment. And I was just like, no, I don't want to be moving around. I've worked so hard to get to where I'm at. So I'm like, if you don't want to get married, I understand, you know, I'm the one that's changing the dynamics here. And he's like, nope, let's get married. Well, 8 months later, he's unhappy. He's miserable. He's not happy doing what he's doing. I said, you know what? Don't let my fears stop you from pursuing what you want to do.
Sure.
Why don't we join the reserves? And that way you don't have to move.
Right.
Clearly, I live in Florida now, so that did not end up panning out.
Yeah.
So at 32 years old, the last year that he can join the military, he joined. He went to basic training, officer candidate school. Missed our 1 year anniversary. I think within the first 3 months, I only had 3 phone calls with him. So I was alone on my anniversary, but that's just part of the military life. And then he comes back and then he gets accepted into aviation school. So he's a Black Hawk pilot and that meant moving. So of course my initial plan of let's be a reservist, we won't have to move. I was very fortunate that the organization that I worked for, we had just gone through all of this restructuring. So it was right around the same time. And the VP of sales is a former military. And he said, you know what, why don't you live in Alabama with your husband while he goes to flight school and you can commute to Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, and North Carolina. So every Monday I would fly out, I'd come home every Thursday. I was on the road 250 nights in 1 year.
I've been there.
And
yeah, that's nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, that sense of accomplishment when you get Diamond Delta, you like wear that badge with pride. I don't wear it with pride anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's kind of the journey of what led me to moving to the Southeast and him joining the military and where am I
When were your twins born?
So my twins were not born until 2017. So after he finished Black Hawk Aviation School, we were able to relocate to Florida because my position had then been filled in California. So I couldn't go back to California, but there happened to be, I could now live, technically live in my territory or my region. So we ended up moving to Florida. And a year after we moved here, that's when our twins were born.
And so as the twins are growing up, you had some other, you know, we talked about kind of pre-COVID and COVID. I mean, that was a lot happening in your life. And that's when you transitioned, I think, out of corporate. Walk me through that.
Yeah. So my husband served a year deployment in Iraq. So while he was in Iraq, I was still leading the team for the organization that I was with. When he left, they were 1.5 years old. So they were, you know, they had just learned to walk. They're still learning some of their words. You know, they're saying thunder like thunder.
Yeah.
What is their second word? We live in Florida. There's lots of thunder.
Thunder. Yeah.
Yeah. So they were still in cribs. He comes back. They're 2.5 years old. They're in toddler beds. They're formulating full sentences. They're talking back at him. He's not used to that one.
Sure.
Throwing temper tantrums at 2.5 years old. So it was a big shift for us. He comes back from deployment and we're trying to navigate through this new phase of life. I'm a different person. I was the one that was making all the sole decisions when it comes to parenting while he's deployed. I had my own rhythm. I had learned to be a lot more independent when he was gone. He's coming back from Iraq, so he's seeing war. He's been in frightening situations. And we're trying to find a way to come together. Well, which was a lot more challenging than I anticipated.
Sure.
But right as we started to find our rhythm, March 8th, I lost my mom to suicide. And so the moment that I found out that she had chosen to take her life, I was just devastated to learn that she was in that much pain that she felt the only option was to end her life. And as I'm trying to cope and heal with what was going on, I lost her March 8th. March 13th, the whole world shut down with the
Right,
global
a week
pandemic.
Later, were you
Yeah,
like,
a week
what
later.
is going on? Like, the whole world is off its axis. Yeah, Danielle, so much is coming at you. Your husband, he's back now, but your mom has chosen to take her life, and we're in a pandemic, and you've got twins who at that point are what, 2.5, you said?
2.5, and because they were born 6 weeks premature, they had respiratory issues. So every time they get sick, they're on breathing treatments. So there was so much fear around COVID because we didn't know anything at that point. So all I knew was it's a respiratory virus and there was people dying. And so I was terrified,
Right.
absolutely terrified. I did not want to risk my kids getting sick.
How did you get through all that? I mean, I just feel like, I mean, we all had different things going on in COVID, but you had, my only thing with COVID was just COVID, right? That was enough. I mean, it slowed down our business. It affected different things as it did a lot of people. You had this new dynamic in your family. You had this situation with your mom. Were you close with your mom when she passed, or?
No, so my mom and I had an estranged relationship. My mom, in a lot of ways, my mom and I had a very beautiful and a very broken relationship. In a lot of ways, my mom, I aspired to be just like her. In fact, I followed in her footsteps. She was a region manager for a pharmaceutical company, but she came from nothing. She came from being a single mom, working as a server and going to school full time while having a 5-year-old. So I saw her go from nothing to building a very successful career in medical sales, becoming a region manager in the 1990s, which as a female in the 1990s
Yeah,
really
that was
wasn't as common.
sure.
But I also found, so growing up, she was like my idol. I also found out though that later on in life that my mom took me from my father. So my mom had made the decision one day to leave and not tell my dad where I was. So there was a lot of anger and resentment, and my mom had suffered from some mental health. So we had a very, like I said, a very beautiful and broken relationship. We had been estranged for some time.
Yeah, but I lost my mom. Similar age probably to what you were. I was in my 30s. Wasn't suicide, although she had had many suicide attempts, but there was, you know, prescription drug abuse and alcohol abuse and mental issues and just a lot of drama. And I look back on it now and I have a lot more empathy now because I had my own struggles with alcohol. But at the time when I started having kids, actually by the time I was your age or by the time you had your twins, I think I had kids earlier. So, but I got to this point probably around 30 where I was like, I need to protect the family unit from bad influences, drama, whatever it is, which I think was the right move. But now as I'm saying it, and even as I've reflected on it, it was maybe a little, there's this thing of having good boundaries. And then there's this thing of maybe the boundaries were a little too tough because I'd love to have more time with her now, you know, but well, I'm sorry you had to go through that. How, you know, but what's interesting to me is so when I look at your timeline, I'm like, if the epicenter of the most challenging moments in your life all kind of conspired at or around 2020, early 2020, it also looks in your timeline that that was your biggest stage of growth. That's your podcast. That's your book. That's your business. Like what about that time frame? Was it necessity? Was it the fact that you couldn't be out in the field? Was it, you know, that you had left the corporate job because of the toxic environment? What was it about that time frame and what could have been something that took you down actually seemed to kind of propel you?
Yeah, so at that time, so right after my mom had passed and the global pandemic started, June is kind of this time where the company that I had been with was acquired by a larger organization. It's a top 10 pharmaceutical company. It's a Fortune 100 company. And it became a very toxic work environment, a very toxic work environment for a lot of managers. And ended up being that I decided to leave the organization. And I think that the combination between losing my mom, my husband returning back from deployment, and leaving a toxic work culture, I really had every aspect of my life was going, and then my kids, the risk of them being sick, like every aspect of my life was being challenged. And I had tied my identity to my job. I had tied my identity to the paycheck, the title, the awards that I had earned over the years. And it ended up being that through all of those challenges, I've learned that life is going to, we are going to go through challenges in life. And it's up to us when we go through challenges. It's how we react is what defines what success is going to look like for us. Because at the end of the day, there's many ways that we can react. I can react in a victim mindset and I can say everything's happening to me, or I can react and say, okay, these are some challenges that I'm going through. I'm going to overcome them, and this is what I'm going to do once I've come out of these challenges. And I felt in those moments where I really needed to work on my own mindset at that moment, because I was experiencing panic attacks. I was having a hard time breathing. My heart would race. I just had lost so much of my identity, where I started to post inspirational posts on LinkedIn. And what I noticed was not only was everybody else, like everybody was like reaching out to me and having this positive reaction, I started to notice my own mindset shift. And I don't say mindset in a woo-woo way. I'm a big believer that in cognitive behavioral therapy, that we can rewire the way that we think based off of the way that we talk. It's neurolinguistics. And so that's really what helped me get out of that devastating time in my life.
Yeah, that's amazing. And did you write the book that same year? Was it the next year?
No, I needed to do a lot of self-discovery and reflection before I could even write the book. So a lot of the book, the flow of the book, Unstoppable Grit, is I share a story, whether from my life or from a client's life or experience working in corporate. I share a story, the lessons learned along the way, and then I always end with practical steps that the reader can take to apply to their life, because I'm about igniting transformation and I want to see a positive change in this world. I want to make a positive impact in this world. So before I was able to write the book, I needed to do some self-reflection and self-discovery so that I could provide tools in the book to help others.
And so what does life look like for you now? I mean, what, so now you're a coach, you're helping corporate, you do keynote speech, you've got your book, you got your podcast. So that's been going for a while now. You got like 150 episodes out, I think, give or take.
Yeah, so I started the podcast about a year after the pandemic. So it's about 2.5 years. We have 150 episodes. It's rated the top 5% globally in the world, downloaded in 90 countries. And the areas that we focus in on is career, leadership development, and burnout prevention, which are the key areas that I speak to in my keynotes as well.
Awesome. Thank you. And where can people, is your book on Amazon? How can people get it? Your website, both?
Yeah, so my book is on Amazon, so they can purchase on Amazon. And then right after they purchase on Amazon, they can go to my website and they can put in their order number and they will actually receive a free courageous goal setting guide that also is some exercises to help them in breaking through the roadblocks that are standing between them and achieving their goals.
Very cool. Well, super impressed by you and your background. And I love how you've, I get the title of the book. It's taken a lot of grit, I think, to get through, you know, some of the things that have happened for not just to get through them, but to use them, I think, is, like I said, a catalyst for growth and a catalyst for contribution, really, too, which is really cool. So thank you so much for joining us, Danielle.
Thank you. It's been an honor to be on the Leaders Lab podcast.
You got it. Talk to you soon. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Leaders Lab podcast. If you enjoyed listening as much as we enjoyed making it for you, please head over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you're listening and leave us a 5-star review. And while you're there, make sure to follow the show. That'll make sure that new episodes get downloaded to your device so you can listen from wherever you are. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week in the Leaders Lab.